It is the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Sally Pipes is back with us today, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank founded in 1979. Prior to being president of PRI in 1991, she was assistant director of the Fraser Institute based in Vancouver, Canada. We're talking healthcare policy and what is on the horizon after all this disruption. Sally Pipes on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Hi, Sally. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thanks for making time. Well, you know, I'm kind of hopeful. I feel like we hit the wall on how bureaucratic and big and top-down healthcare can be, i.e. Obamacare. What's the hope of taking it from the bottom up? I have doctors up and down the road near me where our studio is, dentists up and down the road. What if we inverted the model and said we want to see this from bottom up without asking insurance companies what's up, looking for what's best in delivering to local people for the local doctor and look at a new model? What would you say to that?
Well, I think it's a very good idea. I mean, the thing is that, you know, we've become so, the American people have become so involved, and the government, of course, is trying to take over the healthcare system. So, you know, government has been empowered, in particular the federal government and states, in the healthcare business. We need to empower doctors and patients, and as you say, get back to putting them in charge of the healthcare system, because like in any other industry in this country, that would really bring about competition. It would reduce costs, and it would give people choices in the type of healthcare that they want and that they need, rather than this top down saying everybody has to have this kind of healthcare and they have to pay this. And we've seen, you know, under Obamacare, as you know, very high premiums, high deductibles, to the point that people can't afford to use the plans that they have on the exchanges. And, of course, I just saw today that Centene is being sued by patients because the number of doctors in the network on the exchanges are so small. So we need to invert the whole thing and really, as I say, put the American people in charge of their health care.
Awesome. Now, I'm going to sound 100 years old when I say this, but I'm really about half of that. We had Dr. Sherman when I was a boy. We never had health insurance. My entire growing up, all through, no health insurance at all. But Dr. Sherman would come to the house at 10:30 at night, take a look, leave a little bit of medicine. He was gone in 15 minutes, but he did that. And if that were a couple of hundred years ago, I would say, well, forget it. But it wasn't a couple of hundred years ago. How did this get so far from him, his unlit chewed up cigar, his doctor's bag, his smile,
yes,
and the cup of coffee my mom would offer him, one sip, thanks Tina, and he was gone? I mean, it was just, it sounds like it's out of a movie, but this was my childhood in the 60s.
Right, and that's the way so many American people of like our age, you know, think of healthcare, and the fact that, you know, the doctor, you know, was beholden to you and your family, not to an insurance company or to a government organization. And in many cases, doctors would come to your house and to families that really couldn't afford it, but they always did things sort of pro bono to people that they wanted to help. And because of all of the regulations, the mandates, insurance companies, you know, that whole thing has gone away, and we're stuck with, you know, such a giant, you know, overpowerment of doctors. And you know, we're seeing, certainly because of Obamacare, a number of doctors 55 and older getting out of the practice of medicine because they can't do the treatments and things that they want to do. And it's just because it's so bureaucratic now. And, you know, what does this mean for the young people, like for our children who, you know, would want to go to medical school and become doctors when they find out their salaries are going to be controlled, what they do will be controlled. It's not, medicine will not attract, as it has done in the past, the best and the brightest. And we're certainly seeing this in the UK right now with the National Health Service, their government-run health service, which is one of the early examples of single payer, where government can't afford this. 52,000 surgeries were canceled the week before. Mm. People are lying on gurneys. ambulance waits. This is the way we're going to go if we don't, you know, turn the whole healthcare system upside down, as you mentioned, because we've got Bernie Sanders out there who just today said on June 23rd he's going to have his Medicare for All town hall meeting. You know, we're seeing so many politicians now trying for this, and that's the last thing we want. Americans want choice.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure this caught your eye in the last 48 hours, but there's a shortage of saline solution bags that were being made in Puerto Rico, devastated by the storm, cut production. One of the big companies says, yes, we're back online, but we won't be up at the level we were for quite some time. And the impact was that doctors, nurses now are having to manually infuse patients instead of just hanging the bag and making sure it's moving and going on to the next important thing. So my contention, I would love to hear what you think this is. I contend that it's this kind of bureaucracy that one arm really doesn't know what the other arm needs, and the word doesn't get through the bureaucracy in a timely fashion. In other words, inventory would have told this story. Somebody paying careful attention would have told this story. But you had institutions on this newscast caught surprised that this was happening. What did you think of that episode? Or, you know, what does it tell you that that's, it seems like a very strong and revealing symptom?
Right. Well, I think, you know, this is exactly the kind of example where government gets more and more involved and the market isn't working. And so normally you'd have new entrants into the field. People would be managing what, you know, what their supply is, what the demand will be and all of that. But when you have so many rules, you know, it keeps out a lot, that all these rules and mandates and regulations keep out so many, young entrepreneurs who would want to, you know, get into the business. And we're certainly seeing now, you know, with the pharmaceutical industry, how there's more and more of a push under Medicare Part D. People on the left are saying, you know, that the government should be setting the prices that pharmaceutical companies can be paid. You know, this will completely destroy research and innovation, where, you know, all of the top research and development is done in the United States. It's not done, you know, in France anymore, Germany. Mm. You know, we need to let the market work. And this is not happening, you know, and this is why I'm pushing so hard to, you know, not allow America to go the way of Canada or England and have Medicare for All, where the single supplier of our healthcare is the government.
All right. I'm going to run a heresy by you. And you tell me if I brought this up the last time we spoke, because this has been on my mind for the last couple of years when this has really gotten out of control. What is wrong with saying there's going to be two tiers of health care? Everybody knows if you're poor, you can't buy a Maserati. You're taking the bus. Your neighbor is rich. They're going to go buy a new car every year. You don't ask society, I want a car like that guy has. So what is wrong with saying we're going to have a public safety net, your heart attack victims, your gunshot bleed out victim, that's going to go in a lower class of healthcare. And we're a capitalist country. If you want to buy great healthcare, it's going to be available. And tell the truth that we can't draw a line that is equal for 300 million plus, bigger and bigger, because mathematically it makes no sense. And just be candid about it. I know nobody wants to be the one that says, okay, I'm sorry, that's as far as your care goes. But it's as far as your care goes. It's a paid-for service. The doctor, the hotel, the hospital, maintenance people. It's easy to see. It just seems so unthinkable for a certain generation. But if you told my grandfather this when he was warning us back in 1961, Ed Woods, one day they're going to socialize the medicine, don't let it happen. They all knew they were poor. They knew they were poor. They weren't ashamed of it. They weren't jumping off the roof because of it. It put the burden on them as opposed to being able to pay for all of their needs to be met. Is that just too off the chart?
Well, no, I don't think it is at all. I mean, we've moved more and more to a society where government is making decisions for us. And so, I mean, if you look at our healthcare system, 50% of healthcare today is already in the hands of government, because we have our seniors on Medicare. We have Medicaid. We now have you know, 76 million Americans are on Medicaid, the program for low-income Americans. When you look at the studies that have been done, the outcomes of healthcare outcomes for people on Medicaid are virtually the same, in some cases worse, than people who are uninsured. And so just by saying let the government run all of these things, the CHIP program, the VA, look what's happened with the VA, our vets are not getting good healthcare because there are no private, you know, there hasn't been private alternatives. The CHOICE program is sort of mediocre, but it should be opened up a lot more. So if we had a more competitive market in healthcare, more and more people at the lower income brackets would be able to get, you know, good health care, and we would be, you know, allowing our health care system, you know, to continue to be one of the best in the world. What are the two industries that government really runs, and the outcomes are not good? One is K-12 education, and the other is health care.
Right.
So we need to put market reforms into our healthcare system, and then everybody will rise up. Why should we bring everybody down to the lowest common denominator? And no one can get good health care unless, you know, you can be your own doctor.
Well, now that's, you're going right to my next point. Homeopathy is not only popular, but it's gotten so much better. Shouldn't it be a bigger part of how people are taught to care for themselves? I'm thinking 7th, 8th grade. You should be learning what you can do with a cut if you can't get to a hospital, how to disinfect a wound. Isn't this just as important as learning math and English, surviving?
Well, right, and it's all about our own well-being. And, you know, one of the things that has been a tremendous boost in this country has been these the retail health clinics where, you know, they're at the Walgreens or the CVS, where, you know, families can go there if their child has, you know, an earache or a cut or whatever. Right. And it's much cheaper than waiting to go to the hospital, to emergency room, or to a doctor's office. We need to educate people so that they know what the alternatives are, and the fact that, you know, people, there's so many things that people could take care of themselves without having to turn up at an ER. And we've certainly seen since Obamacare and the number of people on Medicaid, as I mentioned, who, you know, cannot find a doctor because doctors aren't taking them because of low reimbursement rates from insurers. And so the number of people turning up at emergency rooms is increasing, not decreasing, as President Obama had promised the American people. So we need to put people in charge of making decisions for themselves. They're perfectly capable of doing this.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm reminded all the time that 200 years ago, there was no such apparatus at all. And people used what they were taught by their parents, what got passed down in their family, what the smart person on the block or in the community would share. There was so much going on that was non-institutional, and it was doing a great job. The point I want to examine now with you for a moment, would it be good if we really had 50 different standards for how healthcare operates? If we really break the stranglehold in Washington by saying, look, state by state, you know, if you live here, you know what to expect. If you live halfway across the country, you know what to expect. And if rich states like California and New York want to be all lofty and big brother and single payer, they'll do that. But you could go two states over and find a completely different system. Is there any hope for that?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, what one thing that Mr. Trump has said is that, you know, he ran his campaign on repeal and replacement of Obamacare. You know, there's a lot going on right now. Senator McConnell said today that he doesn't want to bring repeal of Obamacare up again. They tried that and it didn't work. But I think we really need to, you know, allow the states to make big decisions. Send the funds from the feds to the state so they can run their own healthcare systems. Unfortunately, you know, I live in California. I think you live in New York. We're in the states that probably the government, they would say, well, you know, Big Brother has to take care of you and we need to have a single payer system. The problem is if you get a system like that in New York and California, it takes several years before the real, you know, long waiting lists, ration care, lack of access to the latest technology comes out. And by then, you know, many other states may follow. But we have to stop, you know, this in its tracks and really allow the states to experiment and try new things. I mean, just look today when CMS Administrator C. Verma, you know, has announced the new work rules for people on Medicaid. I mean, and, you know, the states will, you know, they don't have, the states don't have to do this, but they certainly will have the opportunity to apply for waivers and bring in workforce rules, which I think is terrific. But
right.
it shouldn't, the Fed shouldn't be, you know, making all these decisions for us. Let each state, and if I want to move to Arizona or Nevada, then I can move there.
Amen. Boy, get, I tell you,
you're such kind a, of
you are such a breath of fresh air on this. I'm really enjoying our conversation. Your next book is going to be called The False Promises of Single-Payer Healthcare, I read. By the way, is that book close to release?
Well, it's with the publisher, Encounter Books, and I'm waiting to hear back on what their edits are. But it is destined to come out this spring. So I'm hoping it'll be out, you know, March, April, because I think we really need to, I really need to educate the American people on why what Bernie Sanders is calling for. And now he has people like Senators Gillibrand and Booker and Elizabeth Warren,
yeah.
All these people,
right.
you know, that are, you know, pushing single payer. They, and the American people need to know what this means. Just look what's happening, as I said, in England, where, you know, it's devastating for people.
Well, exactly. So if you wanted to direct people's attention to start thinking about the false promises, what are one or two of them that are especially cruel that have taken root, and then the rude awakening when it comes can be devastating or worse? What would you want people to start thinking about? Because when your book comes out, I'm going to devour it. But what should be on the agenda for thinking as we look at false promises of a single payer system?
Well, the first thing is that, you know, I'm a Canadian. I grew up under a single payer. So, you know, Canada, the federal government totally took over the healthcare system in 1984. This provinces manage it. But do you know that the wait from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist in Canada last year, 2017, was 21.2 weeks? Mm. That's over 5 months. The wait in 1993 was only 9.3 weeks. So what this means is the American people need to realize that, sure, you may have a care card, but what good is a care card if you can't get a doctor to treat you, because the government doesn't put the money into the system. So you have to, you know, wait, and if you have to wait 11 weeks on average for an MRI or 33 weeks to see a neurosurgeon, you know, if you have a potentially disastrous condition, this is not what the American people want. My mom used to say, you're becoming one of those impatient Americans. But, you know, Americans are impatient. Impatient Canadians and Brits say, well, the doctor says I have to wait 33 weeks when I think I have a brain tumor. Well, that's fine. But, you know, it's not fine, and it's not what we want for our people. And so, and then the thing is that the politicians say it's free. Well, you know what? It's not free. The average Canadian family pays $12,000 a year in hidden taxes to cover this care where they have to wait for care. And they can't get a doctor. And so many doctors have, you know, retired, and the best aren't going into medicine. So these are the things that the American people need to know. If government is the sole provider, just like, remember, in the U.S. Post Office, I mean, you have long waits. They've become more competitive when they've had to compete with, you know, UPS and FedEx. Let's
Absolutely.
Open the market, not close it down.
Right. Well, you know, the whole idea, even in your example, even the 9 weeks was hurting my ears. So to escalate up to 21 weeks, it sounds like, you know, a real threat to life at that point. I don't know how the priorities
well,
are in the
it
protocol.
It is. My own mother died from colon cancer because she was a senior and couldn't get a colonoscopy when she thought she had cancer.
The profession of healing, is it ripe for disruption also? You know, there's the management of payment and the categorization of payment, et cetera, hospitals and, again, protocols. But the inherent practices of doctors, nurses, is it also due for a revamp?
Well, I guess I'm very worried right now, because so many young people today graduating from college, whether they've been to Princeton or Harvard or Stanford or Cal State San Bernardino, they're all coming out of college with this idea that they are entitled to all of these things. You know, these programs are not free. Everything that government provides is paid for by taxpayers, and young people don't realize that it's not free and that they're going to have to work hard and subsidize, you know, so many of people like us when we get older. So we need to change that mentality so that our young people sort of realize the importance of what built America and the entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to move this country forward. And just because you're a great country once and a great nation doesn't mean you're guaranteed that forever, as we've seen with so many nations around the world.
Oh, no question, right? I mean, when you drift, then you're in peril. Sally, thank you so much for articulating a lot of this. We're going to watch it this year. If you had to make a prediction, and we're back on the air a year from now, what could we hope for this year that would make a difference?
Well, I think a lot of the things that, you know, would get rid of Obamacare are probably, I think, I hope, will be done through executive orders and administrative action. And of course, we saw in the tax reform bill, the individual mandate was repealed. We're seeing now that the rules will be out shortly for allowing people to buy skinny plans, short-term plans that suit their needs, allowing people to use their health reimbursement accounts to pay for premiums. There's all kinds of things that can be done, because if the Republicans don't do well in the 2018 elections, it'll be because the candidates, the Republicans, promised the American people repeal and replace, and they haven't done it. So I hope that we see a lot of things done through executive orders, I say, and administrative action, so that we can, so that Obamacare will actually, you know, implode,
right,
and that we can bring about choice to the American people.
You know, in just a couple of words, and I know the time is short, but what's your take on why it got stuck? This is the old school lobbying and opposition industry prevailing over public manifestation, you know, the public saying this is what we want, but an industry stopping it.
Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, when Mr. Trump was inaugurated on January 20th as president, they had made these big promises. I don't think that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, got together with Trump and said, okay, you people, you all need to bring your various members, representatives, together, and we promise this, let's have a plan to move forward. They didn't, and so everybody was fighting within. So a lot of the Republicans on the Senate side and on the House side were fighting about what they wanted, and we want this and we want that and we don't want this, and so there was no education. And I think that was the real problem. They should have been organized and come out as a unified force at the Senate level and at the House level. And I think we probably would have got it done. They would have got it done.
Well, thanks again. This is really important stuff. It does get a little heavy for people, you know, to understand
right,
how all of it works. But this is our job, right, is to make it easier to understand, to show people what's really going on. And, you know, disruption has got to be the name of this game, because it's just becoming so monolithic, so huge, that at some point it'll just be self-perpetuating. We'll never be able to crack it. This is the time. Thank you for your great work on this. The new book, The False Promises of Single-Payer Healthcare, will be out shortly. And you can visit the website, pacificresearch.org. Sally Pipes, thank you again.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to talking again.
You got it. So
Bye.
Do we. Sally Pipes, great guest.